This is Fresh Air. This Saturday marks the 50th anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, the attack that brought America into World War II. It's an anniversary of great significance to both Japan and America, although the meaning will be different in each country. My guest James Fallows has articles about the anniversary in the current editions of The Atlantic, where he's Washington editor, and U.S. News and World Report. He covered the Pacific Rim during the second half of the 80s, and he's completing a book on the future of East Asia. Americans recently started gearing up for the anniversary, but Fallows discovered it was already on the minds of the Japanese several years ago when he was living in Japan.
It was a very surprising thing to me. It was about three years ago, I think early in 89, about the time of Emperor Hirohito's death and funeral, that people started asking me what I thought would happen in the U.S. at the time of the anniversary. And I had no idea what they were talking about. And this was one of many things that confused me in Japan, so I just figured I would keep quiet about it. As the months wore on, people started to say, well, what about the upcoming 50th anniversary? And what about December 8th, which in Japanese date-keeping is the anniversary of Pearl Harbor? And over the last year, virtually every time I've talked with a Japanese government official or journalist in Japan, the question has turned around to what's going to happen in America when this 50th anniversary comes. There's been just much more of a buildup for it in Japan than in the U.S. The general expectation of the last year has been, boy, when this 50th anniversary comes around, the Japan bashers are really going to have a field day, and who knows what sorts of things the Congress might do then, who knows what the press is going to say. I think from the American perspective, this is another anniversary. 2 years ago, there was a 50th anniversary of Hitler in Poland. There have been recent anniversaries of the landing on the moon or the fall of Saigon. It's something that we'll concentrate on now and probably not a month from now, but it's been a real culmination in Japan.
Do you think the Japanese maybe don't realize what a gift we Americans have for trivializing important anniversaries?
Yeah, I think that is so that they I think the fact that all the major news magazines will have cover stories about Pearl Harbor this month, and that the TV networks will have specials, this will seem to confirm the expectations in Japan, because it will look as if the American news system is focusing on this right now. But most consumers of American news know that it's this way with many anniversaries. So I think there may be an inability to see how routine a part of our news this is.
So meanwhile, what has the Japanese popular press had to say about the anniversary of Pearl Harbor?
The high road is that all the major newspapers are having big series comparable to those in the American newspapers of Japan and America after 50 years, how does their relationship now look? But over the previous year, there has been what I think of as a seriously misleading strain of publicity in Japanese magazines, especially purporting to say that America goes around obsessed with this anniversary and preparing to strike. I'll give just two illustrations. There's a book called The Coming War with Japan by two American authors, which had modest impact in the U.S. It was an interesting book. I read it and wrote a review about it. I don't think anybody else wrote a review besides me. In Japan, the thing was a runaway bestseller, which is partly because there is more interest in Japan on U.S.-Japan relations than there is in the U.S. More important, it was portrayed in Japan as having been a bestseller in the U.S., which it was not. There was another article that caught my interest from a magazine called Sapio, which is a respectable magazine, and it said that as the anniversary of Pearl Harbor drew near, that the following joke was being widely told in the U.S., and the joke was this in its entirety. Officers of the Ministry of Finance, Japan's elite, piss cold as ice, and an abacus is implanted in their brains. So this was what they were told. We were all sort of telling each other in the locker rooms as we got ready for the anniversary.
Well, you certainly couldn't be a stand-up comic and get away with that. Yeah, is that just a problem with the translation, or?
I'm sure this must have seemed funnier in another language. But I think the point is that even considering its intrinsic humor quotient, I don't know that anybody's been telling that many jokes about the U.S.-Japan relationship, especially 6 months ago when this article was published.
The apology issue is in the news now. Will Japan apologize for attacking Pearl Harbor? And then yesterday, President Bush said that he doesn't feel he owes the Japanese an apology for America's using the atom bombs there. What's the significance of these apology questions?
I think this touches on some of the most delicate and hard-to-resolve matters of the war's after effects. What Japan would apologize for in the case of Pearl Harbor is something that wouldn't satisfy Americans, because it would apologize for the technical failing of attacking before giving notice of war. You know, the negotiations were still continuing in Washington, and it was in that sense a sneak attack. And that, in the Japanese contention, was a mistake. They didn't mean to do that, and that has been apologized for. What Americans think of as an apology is to say, you know, we were wrong. It was evil of us to strike you in this way. And I think it would be almost impossible for a legitimate Japanese government to say that, because in the prevailing Japanese view, it was a big mistake, it turned out very badly, but it wasn't that much worse than things that any other state does in time of war to defend itself. And so from Japan's point of view, it's almost impossible to apologize for something that doesn't seem that immoral to them. Now, this brings us to Hiroshima. I think there is, in the sort of prevailing opinion class in Japan, a precise pairing of these issues. Japan attacked America. America dropped atomic bombs on Japan. There is a kind of moral neutrality to the whole question, and nobody needs to dwell on it anymore. I think there's not much Japanese demand for an American apology about Hiroshima, but it is the first retort you hear if Americans say, well, what about Pearl Harbor? The question is always, what about Hiroshima? There just is such a different moral calculus in the two countries on these issues that it's very hard to see how apologies could ever be worked out.
Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. My guest is James Fallows, and he's the Atlantic Magazine's Washington editor. He lived in and wrote about the Pacific Rim from 1986 to 89, and now he's writing a book on the future of East Asia. We're talking about the anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and we'll talk more after the short break. This is Fresh Air. James Fallows is my guest. President Bush will be going to Japan in a few weeks. What do you think he'll be talking about with the Japanese?
To one extent, the agenda for this kind of talk is preordained, because it's been the same for about 20 years. The talks will be about, number one, trade problems, difficulties of entering the American market, the Japanese market, frictions in the American market. Number two will be about increasing Japanese support for American troops in that part of the world. Number three, it will be about America's continued stake in Asia. What will be different, I think, is that I once worked as a speechwriter for Jimmy Carter, which had its ups and downs, but I wouldn't want to be the speechwriter for George Bush when he has to give his addresses at Pearl Harbor and then in Japan, because there's almost no way to come out of this ahead, I think. If he gives the kind of speech that would be looked for in Japan, namely saying, the past is long behind us, we have been partners for 45 years, let's be partners still, that would not necessarily satisfy all of his American constituency, especially on December 7th, when he's, I assume, giving a speech. If he gives a speech which would reflect some of the remaining American grudges about that time, then it's going to be offensive to the Japanese. And so I think it's not, this part of the trip is not an easy matter.
Yeah, well, I guess he didn't originally plan on going to Japan after Pearl Harbor Day. He was initially going to go before, but then this was the trip that was canceled after the election, when it was clear that people felt he was spending too much time on international affairs.
I understand the case for President Bush canceling one of these trips, but if it had been possible, I think it would have been more sensible to cancel the NATO trip that he took last month, because despite all the talk we've heard about the dynamic future in Asia and America's stake in the Pacific, there's been surprisingly little high-level attention in the last 4 or 5 years towards East Asia from the U.S. The Japanese press often points out that Secretary Baker has, I think, spent one or two nights in Japan during his time in office. President Bush was there for the funeral of Emperor Hirohito, but I don't know that he's been there since then. And this is as compared to many other countries of more modest importance to the U.S. that you can reel off where the president has been. So the constant fear or the constant speculation in East Asia over the last 5 years has been that, well, the U.S. is just about out of money. They're going to turn in upon themselves more and more. We can't really count on them to remain interested in Asia. And a last-minute cancellation of a major trip like this aggravates those suspicions.
You've said in one of your articles that there are similarities in Japan between 50 years ago and now. Some of those similarities are disturbing. What are you thinking of?
Well, I should make clear that I'm not thinking about militarism or military aggressiveness. That, I think, is very much different. The Dutch writer Carol von Wolfram has written at great length about an imbalance of power in the Japanese government, where you have very strong power centers at the second level, where the Ministry of Finance is very strong, and Toyota is very strong, and Daiichi Kangyo Bank is very strong. But there's a weakness of power at the center. There isn't one strong man in Japanese society. The prime minister is relatively weak. The emperor is mainly ceremonial. And so you have cases where these second-level powers can sort of go on unencumbered and have results that are bad for the whole society. The classic case from the 30s was when both the Army and the Navy, for their own reasons, expanded in ways that proved ruinous to the whole society. If you took a poll of all of Japan's leaders in the late 30s, they would have known that attacking the U.S. was suicidal. Nonetheless, it was in the Navy's interest, and things went that way. There was nobody to rein them in.
What do you plan on doing Saturday for the anniversary?
I will live a normal day. I'm a normal family man in Washington. I should point out that I was born almost a decade after Pearl Harbor. This event has not had that much significance ever to me, except that both my parents told me what they were doing, I guess, when they were in high school when Pearl Harbor happened. And so, like most people in America, I have no direct memory of this event, and I will view it as another anniversary like others we've encountered.
Will you view it, though, with more interest because it's about a part of the world that you're writing about? Are you going to watch all of the news shows and try to watch the miniseries and the specials and so on?
I find it very interesting to watch these shows, mainly for the lesson they are teaching Americans about the war. You know, what's the main lesson that should be taken from Pearl Harbor and from the war's aftermath? So yes, I probably will watch a lot of them, not in any kind of exercise of homage to the day, but just to see how America is observing this occasion.
So do you have a sense already of what the mass media is teaching us the lesson is?
I have been surprised so far by several things. One is in the print coverage. I'm thinking especially of Time and Newsweek. I'll exclude U.S. News since I wrote the story. They ran on this. But in Time and Newsweek, the coverage was surprisingly harder and harsher than I expected. The norm in American coverage of U.S.-Japan relations over the last, say, 30 years has been to say, well, we have our little tiffs, but on the whole, this is the most important partnership. And that wasn't the bottom line of the Time and Newsweek stories. They were saying Japan really hasn't reckoned with its history, and there really are some problems between these countries. And that was interesting to me as sort of a bellwether about American intellectual opinion. The TV series that I've seen so far, I think I've seen only one, on the one that was narrated by Jason Robards, I think on Arts and Entertainment Channel, was surprising to me in its sort of cast in amber quality. That is, it looked very much like what you might have seen in the late 40s or 50s about the sneaky Japanese coming in while the virtuous Americans were in their beds. I was surprised how little of the Japanese side of the story was conveyed.
An article in Time magazine ends that Pearl Harbor united Americans in rage and hatred, thus united, powerful and determined, they would prove invincible.
Well, this is the other interesting subtext, and it brings up an article that my children will kill me if I mention again, but I have to because it is the central American dilemma. This is William James's famous Moral Equivalent of War essay. The main effect of Pearl Harbor on America, of course, was to energize it and unify it and get it out of the Depression and make it do things that it had always been capable of doing but couldn't do until it had this electric cattle prod, until it had this terrible stimulus to act. That in that way, Pearl Harbor was a good thing for America. It brought the nation to its best, even though it was for a hateful and hate-filled cause. The dilemma for the U.S. then is how to do this without being attacked, how to do this without having a war, how to do this without hating people. This is why I wish that we'd find some occasion to have a similar anniversary commemorations of Sputnik, because that was also a competitive thing. It was also motivated by fear that the Soviets were going to be shooting things down on us from space, but we didn't actually kill anybody. And almost everything that Sputnik made us do was for the good. The schools taught more things. People felt some common purpose. There was more emphasis on science, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is our age-old dilemma of how to have the moral equivalent, the non-bellicose equivalent of this kind of external challenge, which the U.S., through its history, has needed to shake itself out of a sloth.
James Fallows. He has essays on the anniversary of Pearl Harbor in the current editions of The Atlantic and U.S. News & World Report. He's completing a book on the future of East Asia. This is Fresh Air.